Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Say good morning. I guess you people listening in the Eastern time zone, it's actually afternoon. Good afternoon to you listening to AFR, wherever you may be tuned in. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. And who we got coming up in just a few minutes?
Well, we're going to have Ruth Everhart. She's author of the book Ruined, a memoir. And folks, just a little bit of a warning. If you have little children who are listening, when we have Ruth on, you may want to lower the radio, send them out of the room. It is about something that happened to her when she was a college student. I think you can read between the lines. And so she ministers to those who have had similar experiences. So we will be talking with Ruth in just a few minutes about her experiences and her life after that.
And it's appropriate that we interview her on Miracle Monday, because what happened to her life in her life was a miracle.
Right, in terms of her coming back from that experience. So anyway, so that will be coming up.
You've been following this thing with Donald Trump and Muslim, the dad of the soldier who died, who was a Muslim.
You know, I watched some of the clips of what this gentleman, Khan, I can't remember his first name, and his son was a captain in the U.S. Army,
yeah.
I think, and died in Afghanistan. Was
yeah.
It? And so now he, you know, of course, Khan, you know, criticized Trump
at the Democrat. How this all started, and I haven't kept up with it in detail, but how this all started was this fella and his wife,
Kazir or something.
They're
like
Muslims,
Kazir, yes.
And they spoke at the Democrat National Convention and about their son's sacrifice to, you know, in service of our country,
right.
Which is all good and fine, except that this guy decides he'll make it political and takes on Trump during the speech.
Right.
Says something to the effect that Trump hasn't ever sacrificed anything.
So, and that he's never read the U.S. Constitution.
And he's never read the U.S. Constitution.
Because Trump wants to keep out of the country Muslims who might be radicalized.
Trump's working through some of the specifics on how you exactly do this,
right.
But Trump's point is the Muslims are the one, all the terrorists are Muslims around the world almost exclusively, and so what are we going to do about that? Just keep them from coming into our country. That's the essence of what Donald Trump is talking about. Now, he says things sometimes that, you know, inarticulately, I guess you could say, or need explanation. He doesn't put much nuance on some of the things that he says. I'm talking about Trump. But the point is, to me, this guy is the one that started it. Now, you could have said, well, Trump fell for it. You know,
right.
Trump took the bait. And so, you know, if somebody attacked, you know, if you attack Trump, he's going to attack back. And this guy decided he would take the opportunity. I think it was shameful on his part. I'm talking about the con to try to attack Donald Trump while you're trying to celebrate the service of your son at a political convention. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the guy should have just left Trump out of it, seems to me, and everything.
But that's the whole reason why they had
him up there. They baited Trump.
His son, by the way, died in Iraq, not Afghanistan.
Yeah. So Trump gets into it with you can't win when you're criticizing the father of a slain soldier.
Right. And Trump has made these fumbles before, even including with Senator John McCain, who is now criticizing Trump. Remember, Trump said something to the effect, "Well, you know, why do you say he's a war hero? I don't think someone's a war hero who got caught. All John McCain did was get caught during the Vietnam
Trump
War."
Trump says stuff like that,
and
you know, it's just Trump being Trump. I mean, that's we've gotten used to.
So yeah,
I'm just saying. That Trump's being, what I'm saying here, in my opinion, Trump's being villainized here, and he's not. And yes, you could fault him, but he didn't start this. The Democrats started this by putting this father up there on stage, and then he attacks Trump, And like Trump said, you expect me not to respond? I can't respond just because the guy lost his son, so I'm supposed to be, you know, that's what Trump is saying. Now, the wisdom of responding, I think, I don't think it's good. I think Trump should have just said, well, we appreciate the young man's service to our country, and we're sorry we lost his lives, and I feel bad for his parents. What's your next question? That's what Donald Trump should do.
Right.
But that's not in his nature, usually, to handle things, like I've said.
Diplomatically. He's going to have to learn that.
But the interesting thing is, you don't hear the media all worked up about Hillary Clinton, the Benghazi parents of those who died. She told them whoppers. Hillary Clinton did.
And the mother of one of those killed in Benghazi also spoke at the Democratic convention and attacked.
Republican, you mean?
Yes, at the Republican convention. And she went after
Hillary Clinton. Well, I say that. Here's the thing, though. Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State at the time. So she was directly involved in what happened with Benghazi. So she's fair game. She's fair criticism in that story. Whereas Trump, this guy just said Trump's never sacrificed anything or something to that effect. So this father, this con, he sort of picked on Trump unnecessarily. I guess he was talking about the Muslim, forbidding Muslims from coming into our country. So, you know what, with Donald Trump, some of the things he says, again, I think he's saying things that a lot of people agree with in principle, but he says them sometimes in a way that are inflammatory.
Right.
And I don't know if he can change that. You know, can you teach an old dog new tricks? But if he would be able to refine the message just a little bit, I think people would. I think he'd get further with it.
It's hard to tell because, you know, for the whole last year, since he announced, really, I think a year ago in June or something, when he announced that he was running for president, he has not really been able to change. And some would argue that part of his success has been from his bare-knuckled political brawling, tapping into the anger a lot of people feel towards the political establishment. So, I don't know. This has been such a weird political year. Just defies all all principles of political insight and understanding. I wouldn't know what to advise him. But I do think he loses support sometimes by his lack of discipline, even though his kind of brash style is also part of his attractiveness to people who are angry. So... Or frustrated. It's not just, it's not mindless anger. It's anger that flows out of a frustration with Washington politics. So I don't think it's just simply emotion, but this is one of those areas where a little more discipline. This gentleman and his wife, who appears silently by his side every time he's interviewed.
Khan.
I think he would have gone away after the Democratic National Convention if Trump had just said nothing and moved on.
And the liberal media is looking to pounce on Trump about anything they can find because to cast him in a bad light.
Right.
And I just wish sometimes he would ignore stuff and talk about the bigger stuff.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's probably being advised to do that, but that's just not.
It's not who he is.
It's not who he is.
Yeah. So. All right, you're listening to the radio program, Today's Issues. That would be a miracle. Would that not qualify? If Donald Trump didn't respond to some of this stuff, that would be a miracle?
Yeah, and we just had Miracle Monday the hour before.
All right, take away the phone. From Trump sometime. At 10 o'clock.
Take his Twitter account.
His family needs to go in. Dad, give us the phone.
Intervention.
You're not tweeting tonight, Dad. Go to bed. You're not watching the news. Go to bed. All right. You want to welcome our next guest?
Absolutely. Want to welcome Ruth Everhart, who's author of the book, heartbreaking, really, but also a redemptive story. The title is Ruined. It is a memoir. And as I mentioned to our listeners at the top of this half hour, if you've got little children who are listening, you might want to turn the radio down or send them out of the room, because the book opens with these chilling words, so I'll let them serve as a caution for parents. It happened on a Sunday night, even though I'd been a good girl and gone to church that morning. Ruth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, this is not a book for the faint of heart. This is a very clear look at something that you suffered when you were in college, and you were raised in a Christian home and believe, I guess, that that living for God and being a good girl going to church should have maybe inoculated you or protected you from some of the evil that is in the world, but it didn't. Why don't you tell us, tell our listeners a little bit about your story?
Well, as you said, I was a good girl, raised in a church-going home, went to Christian schools all my life, and by temperament was one who wanted to please her parents, and I think raised to believe that God is our Father, you know, by extension, wanting to please God. And in a Christian college studying literature and religion and sharing a home with some friends off campus, and one night two intruders broke into our home, masked men with guns, who took turns raping us as the night progressed. And so it was a night of trauma, a night that shaped all the days and nights that followed.
Well, Ruth, what year was this when this happened?
This was 1978.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Have things changed in terms of how law enforcement processes these kinds of cases? Because I know, and I just don't know in terms of years when things kind of shifted, but in terms of gathering evidence and then having, you know, either, you know, law enforcement officials or social workers come in to help women, especially walk through the trauma of that. Tell us a little bit about what happened to you and whether things have changed somewhat since the late 70s?
Well, that's a good question. What happened for us was that when we were able to get free of the bonds which we'd been tied, the first thing we did was call call the police department, which was, at that point, seven digits you had to dial on your rotary phone. You know, and the police were there and just very quickly and came in with a evidence gathering team to take fingerprints and so on. We were then taken to the hospital, and it took a long time for us to get processed through the emergency room because there were so many of us. There were five of us who were examined, and it was the first time, this really dates it, it was the first time this hospital had ever collected what's called a rape kit. They have another technical name, but most people know them by that name. And so it was a laborious process, and it wasn't as extensive as I understand they are now. And this was even before DNA testing was available. So they collected evidence, but could not do the kinds of the really intelligent tests that they can do now that are more foolproof. We did end up going through the criminal court procedure because although this had been a serial criminal, they did use our case to prosecute. So we went through the process of testifying against our assailants in a courtroom before a jury. I don't know that I can speak so much to what's going on today, although I do keep in touch with the political football that is rape kit testing, because there has been arguments about how and who should fund the testing on those. I understand many cities and jurisdictions have huge numbers of rape kits on their shelves that have gone untested.
Yeah. Ruth, let me ask you this. And by the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're interviewing Ruth Everhart. She's written a memoir titled Ruined. It is about the case of her and her roommates in college who were raped. And these were serial rapists who had done this before. Ruth, let me ask you this, because you're in your book, as you're walking the reader through what happened, you're also talking about what was the thoughts that were going through your mind, the prayers, and at some point you were unable to pray anymore. And what was the spiritual struggle like, not only that night, but following that, in terms, I think a lot of Christians, especially in the West, where we don't usually have to deal with things like they're dealing with in Egypt or Nigeria or other places like that, there is the expectation that God will protect Christians from harm. How did you walk through that kind of in a spiritual sense?
Yes, during the crime, of course, your only thoughts are about, am I going to survive this? Am I literally going to be alive and able to wake up from this nightmare when the sun comes up in the morning, or is this going to end my life? So that's one kind of spiritual struggle where you're just terrified. And it's kind of almost a time-limited experience because at some point it does end. And then the longer struggle begins of trying to make sense of what happened. If Christianity felt like almost a scoreboard, if you will, of I'll be good and then God will be good to me, which I think is a really common way of experiencing faith for people who haven't really experienced trauma, is to just, it's almost unthinking. It's a right. Santa Claus model. I'll be good, and God will be good in return. And then when you're good and this kind of trauma descends on you, this life and death violation of your innermost self, in a way that was, at the time, in 1978, was so unspeakable. People just did not say the word rape. People say we were held hostage, we were terrorized. But we were sexually assaulted, is what happened. And so then you begin to question, well, was this God's will for me? Because I've grown up in a Calvinist home where the things that happen to us happen by the will of God. So that becomes then a very major struggle. Would God will this evil thing? And so that was the path I had to go down in my own mind. And I ended up going to seminary and going into ministry as I kind of wrestled with that.
So how did you get healing from this? And then maybe speak to how equipped the church is to deal with people who are in their congregations, and not just the ministers, but also the people in the pew, how they respond to it. Do they treat people who have been victimized as pariahs, or do they? So talk about how both of those things, how you kept your faith through all this when some might have just walked away, and how good a job the church either is or is not doing.
Sure. Well, I guess I did keep my faith, although I would say it was completely reinvented. It might not have looked that different on the outside, because I ended up becoming ordained in a denomination that is still classified as Calvinist, and that is the Presbyterian Church USA. And so, you know, from the outside, it might not look like I changed that much, but everything inside of me changed, my whole way of experiencing faith in God. And to say it in the shortest way I can say it is that it went from being just this head experience where I had to think the right doctrinal thoughts and kind of make it all, you know, mathematically perfect or figured out, to becoming a lot more comfortable with mystery and comfortable with the fact that there are parts of the human experience and parts of the divine experience that we do not ever wrestle down and nail down. And that instead of faith being some kind of equation, it's more like a Venn diagram where things overlap and there's points of connection, but there's no mathematical formula of faith. Like if I'm good, God is good, or
right.
You know. Yeah. So, and churches are not so good with those kinds of thoughts. They seem to like to say that there's right and wrong. You know, a lot of Christians are not comfortable with gray areas or areas of complexity or mystery. And sometimes faith is almost like a shield against experience. Like if I hold it up, it will deflect difficulty instead of being a tool for interpreting difficulty. So as someone who went into ministry myself and has worked with people who've experienced the kinds of things I have, I mean, humans don't get through life without experiencing painful
right.
things. So I've had women sit in my office and tell me stories that are very similar to my own, and to say with them, how do we make sense of this? And where is God in this for you now? And is God absent or present? And you know, and how do you go on? How do you go on to be a disciple of Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
And it is in that person of Jesus Christ, of course, that we can make sense of our experience, because Jesus is totally beyond our understanding and yet chose to come down to earth and be wrapped in human flesh and become part of this world we're suffering about. So we do have resources in our faith that we can tap into if we're willing to engage in this vocabulary that includes a word like rape, which we normally, you know, which give your listeners a heads up that we're going to use this ugly word.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Ruth, we're out of time. Tell us the title of your book and where people can get it.
The title is Ruined. And you can get it online through Amazon and all the retailers and in all the major bookstores.
And again, it's subject matter is very traumatic, I guess you could say. So people need to be warned about that. But the story of redemption that you've shared part of here this morning is ultimately where you go with this after what happened to you and your friends being sexually assaulted there. Listen, thanks so much, Ruth, for being on with us, and we wish you the best with the book, and we'll see you in maybe another time, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Ruth.
Ruth okay. Everhart, Everhart. Wow, what a story.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, and Christians overseas experiences more than we probably do here in countries where radical Islam especially is running wild. They seek out Christian women and young girls to attack. And it's the kind of thing where you just go, you know, this is a brutality that you just, it's inexplicable for most of us. And yet it goes on. And so this is a book about, as you pointed out, Tim, about redemption, how God can to bring good out of even this kind of human pain.
All right, folks, thanks for being with us today on the program. We shall return tomorrow. Are you doing the program tomorrow?
I'm with you tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. You're with me always.
I'm with you all week, Tim.
Okay.
You can count on me.
But if I were to have a struggle, you'd be with me all the time.
I would be with you.
Yeah. Okay. So Ed will be here tomorrow, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And we shall have another, hopefully, great program for you then. Keep listening to American Family Radio throughout the day, and we'll see you next time.